One of the things about my book that I really focus on is terroir. So that people can find the wines they like, the grapes they like, based on where they grow the best.
All right, everybody. We're here with Michael Higgins, who is the author of a series of books about wine called Exploring Wine Regions. He's been on the show before. We had him here, oh, I guess it was a year or two ago when he came out with his first book called Exploring Wine Regions of Argentina. And it was a fascinating book. I've yet to get down there, but I'm looking forward to it one of these days. But he just gave a great description of not only the country, but the people in the wine regions and the things that they're going through down there. One of the things I love about his books is they're really good guides, and we'll get into that a little bit more. But I want to welcome to the show right now to introduce the new book, The Central Coast of California. Michael Higgins, welcome back to the show.
Well, thank you very much, Mike. It's nice to be here.
I'm glad to be here. And by the way, we do this in studio a lot, but we are in Michael's house right now. Thank you so much for having me here. This is a beautiful little, we're in a place called Bungalow Heaven.
That's correct. It's the name of this historic district.
In Pasadena, and it's just a gorgeous day, a typical Southern California day, a little fog and in the air, and but it's a beautiful place. Well, listen, I want to get right into this. You are, to give a little bit of background, you used to run a magazine. Why don't you tell us a little bit about your magazine and how that segued into your writing and your photography and how it all worked into this?
Oh my gosh, yes. Flying Adventures Magazine is the name of the magazine that I started back in 1994, actually. So great success building that magazine up to over a million readers in the United States. And it's a magazine for the lifestyle and travel of people on planes.
Perfect.
And so ultimately, I got tired of deadlines, got out of that business. And now I'm in the book business on wine regions. I love travel, food, wine, and people.
Well, that's what the show's about. How perfect that you're
perfect.
Here. It's funny because a lot of what I say, one of our underlying themes of the show, besides food, wine, travel, and lifestyle, is the entrepreneurism aspect of it. And a lot of the guests that I have on, in fact, most of the guests that I have on, started their life or their career doing one thing, and they always had this sort of dream or a feeling that they wanted to do something else. And one of the things I encourage my listeners to do is, you know, follow your dream. I mean, don't give up on your day job just yet, but definitely don't put your dream in a closet and never do it. You're actually the living epitome of what that is all about. I mean, you ran a successful company, but you always wanted to, you didn't like deadlines at a certain point. You wanted to travel and take pictures and share it with people about wine country, and you've ended up doing that.
I love creating what I love to do.
Mm-hmm.
And fortunately, I've never had a job. Really, never had a job. And I just create businesses based on what I want to do.
That's perfect. Well, that's the entrepreneurial way. That's awesome. Well, so Central Coast of California. Now, I understand, I think you mentioned it in an earlier conversation that we were having about you wanted to do a book about California. But California is so different and vast, and there's so many regions in California that you had to sort of narrow it down. Did I get that right?
You are right, because it really did start as California, the whole state,
mm-hmm.
which is a lot.
Yeah.
But I really wanted to focus on the Central Coast of California because it's not so well known. It's in the shadow of the success of Napa and Sonoma.
Mm-hmm.
And I think people don't realize the wines are great. The tourism is great. The food is amazing. And there's great wine regions for every kind of wine you would want to drink.
Yeah. Well, so the focus of the book for all you guys that don't have the book yet is Central Coast of California. And so why don't we describe the Central Coast? Because a lot of people think of, you know, the coast, but I just drove down here from Napa a couple of days ago on Highway 101. And parts of it, you see the coast, but you're really a little bit inland from the coast. But the book covers, I think, Monterey County, San Luis Obispo County, and Santa Barbara County. Is that correct?
That's correct.
So why don't we start at the top? Well, before we even start at the top, I wanted to ask you really what in your mind, and we'll get to dig into this a little deeper as we go, but what in your mind, just from the outset, from a writer, from a creative that has chosen this as your backdrop for the book, why did you choose the Central Coast, and what differentiates it really from sort of the well-known Napa, let's say?
It's a great question. And in terms of defining where the Central Coast is, one of the easy ways is it's south of San Francisco and it's north of Los Angeles.
That's perfect.
And when you talk about Highway 101, it runs through all three of those counties that we're talking about. It literally links all those wine regions. So that's the Central Coast. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that really make it different, really different, is what happened 100 million years ago. Mm. The Pacific Plate came out of the ocean, out of the Pacific Ocean, and it hit the North American Plate. So at that time, the North American Plate covered United States, Canada, Mexico, and here comes this plate, comes out of the ocean and hits the plate. And a piece of it is still above the water. That is the Central Coast. And to even make it more definitive is while this happened 100 million years ago, they're still rubbing shoulders because that line and that movement is the San Andreas Fault.
Okay.
So you sort of think of that line. What's west of that? This is the Central Coast. And so think about the terroir. This is land that's coming deep out of the ocean that's now come up. And we're growing these amazing vineyards with wines in this terroir, this soil that's incredible. And the part of the terroir, of course, is the coast, the cold Pacific Ocean that comes in with the hot valleys that heat up. And we get that diurnal effect from hot days and cold nights, which is what wine grapes absolutely love.
Right.
So this is the perfect place. Really, to be growing great grapes for great wine.
Well, as you mentioned, that diurnal shift, that's sort of the magic of grape regions. And, you know, for folks that know agriculture and have been out in vineyards and the like, a lot of times we think of vineyards are farming, obviously.
Yes.
And you just, for the average person, and I'm putting myself in that category, I think, well, this is dirt and things grow in dirt. And maybe the most important thing is water and temperature. Well, just to give a quick definition or a description of what we mean by terroir. Terroir isn't just the dirt or just the water and temperature, but it's sort of, at the end of the day, it's all these elements combined. As you mentioned, that cool air coming in off of the cold
climate.
Pacific ocean. Yeah, it's all about climate and elevation, and there's all these fundamentals, wind direction, slope of the hill, all that stuff. But that's when a winemaker or a grape grower sees a particular place and they know it and they feel it. That's what I feel happened to the Central Coast. Somebody went, you know, nobody's doing this. And this is the perfect place to grow Pinot, or this is the perfect place to grow Malbec, or a perfect place to grow Merlot. And it turns out that between, one of my favorite regions is between Paso Robles down to San Luis Obispo. And I was just there yesterday, and they're even very diverse in and of themselves. And that, therefore, they grow different grapes altogether. So what was your starting up at Monterey County? A lot of people think of Monterey as Cannery Row, but where they grow the grapes is a little further inland, right?
Yeah. And you know what's kind of a surprise, even for myself, being someone who has been to Monterey many times, is I never really thought there was any wine regions there.
Me too.
And it's funny that, you know, here I am in this business and I still don't know that. And I know about the Santa Lucia Highlands. I know how good the Pinot Noir is there. I have bottles of it in my wine cellar, and yet I never really put two and two together that it's in Monterey.
Right.
And I think it's because Monterey is so beautiful, and it, you know, and it's got the bay and the beaches and all of that. So the wine regions are a little bit away from the town of Monterey.
Right.
Monterey and Carmel by the Sea.
Right.
So what's happened there, which makes it really great for those of us that want a wine taste, is there's just two little towns, Carmel by the Sea and Carmel Valley, that have many wine tasting rooms. The wineries don't wait for you to travel way out there. They bring it right there into those towns, and you can literally just walk down the street from wine tasting room to wine tasting room. But it's also great to go out there because the Santa Lucia Highlands, if you're going to check out the wine regions, that'd be the place to go. There's a road that runs right along there, and the wineries are all at the bottom of the hill at the road, and then their vineyards go all the way up the slope into the highlands, which is where great Pinot comes from. And maybe this is another thing to talk about when we're talking about terroir. It's cold there.
Yeah.
You know, that Monterey Bay is cold. It puts fog into that valley. And Pinot Noir, Chardonnay, they love cold. If you think of Burgundy and the cold.
Exactly.
That's what the place is about.
Well, Carmel Valley, for those of you who haven't got to go there, definitely when next time you're driving down one or you're in Monterey or Carmel, take a jaunt up Carmel Valley. It just goes basically, I think it goes dead east. It goes east and west. And what's interesting is the, it's got high ridges on both sides of it, as I recall, and it sort of sucks in that cold air because on the, if you keep going east, you end up over in like Salinas and in the Central Valley of California, which is really warm in the summer. I mean, it could be 100 degrees easily there, and it's 67 degrees in Monterey, and it's sucking that fog right up into that valley, which is what makes it perfect for, as you said, the Pinots and the Chards. They like that stuff. Well, let's move south a little bit down to one of my favorite spots where I was just at, San Luis Obispo County. Tell us about that.
Yeah. You know what's in San Luis Obispo County that people don't realize is in San Luis Obispo County is Paso Robles.
Yeah.
And Paso Robles is probably the most famous wine region on all of the Central Coast. And it's a warm area.
Very.
Big reds. This is a place for the Bordeaux wines, you know, the Cabernet and the Merlot.
And the Rhones.
And the Rhones, the Syrah, incredible Syrah.
Lots of Syrahs.
Yeah. But also Zinfandel. So this is a great place for Zinfandel. These are kind of the three sort of categories of great wines of Paso Robles. And one of the things that's happened in Paso Robles, if you haven't been there in a year, then you haven't been there because it is growing. It is expanding. Mm-hmm. The number of restaurants are amazing. I mean, great restaurants. Imagine this, Paso Robles, in the middle of, you know, agricultural area. They now have two Michelin star restaurants. Like, is that incredible or what?
Yeah, no kidding. It is funny because back when I was a kid, I lived in Cambria. I went to school in Cambria for a while. And we used to go up to Paso Robles just to get back onto 101 and to go north or south. And it just seemed like a, you know, more of a, I guess, a rural town, you know, horses and farms and that type of thing. And as soon as the winemakers went and sort of put their stake in the ground and started producing literally world-class wine, there's just no doubt about it. They have some fantastic product to work with, the grapes, because of the where they're grown. But it attracted a lot of really good winemakers, very creative people. It's also right near Cal Poly, which is sort of also known as Davis is for its wine enology courses and that type of thing. But as soon as you get a good winery established or wineries established, it draws in the good chefs because they know that food and wine go together.
Food and wine, that's the magic. That's the marriage.
Absolutely.
Yes. And when you go down into where the town is, San Luis Obispo, there is Edna Valley. And I think a lot of people don't even know about Edna Valley, but Edna Valley is the coldest appellation in California. So if you want Chardonnay that tastes like you're from Burgundy, you want that coldness that it gives, that's the place.
Yeah, it's funny. For when I first started getting interested in wine, I would see Edna Valley every once in a while. And I'd been in Australia. And so it sounds like an Australian place, Edna. I mean, there's some places in Australia with that name. And for a while, I thought Edna Valley, when I'd see the labels in the store, I thought it was an Australian wine. And then I discovered it wasn't, obviously. And then I went down there and I had a great interview with Nathan Carlson. He's the winemaker at Center of Effort down there in San Luis Obispo. And we got to go out in the vineyards and walk the area. He really introduced me to the land and what, you know, we stood on hills and looked toward the ocean and felt the breezes. And there's so many little elements and little tiny nuances that is what I think distinguishes really good wine and winemakers from that region. I just loved it. He pointed something interesting out. We were standing on this hill. They call them Moros down there by Morro Bay. And the breeze was coming in from the ocean. And he points to the right, so it would be north. And he says, you know up there where Paso Robles is? And he says, yeah. He says, see those mountains right there? Yeah. He says, they stop here if they're coming south. So we get the cold air, but they don't. Those same mountains are what block the super cold air from coming into Paso. As a result, they have a different wine region altogether. It's like Rhone in France. Rhone is in southern France, so it's got the warmer climate. And then Burgundy has got where the Pinots and Chards come from, is in the cooler region, which is where Edna Valley, like you're talking about.
Well, you know what's pretty amazing about that area? So first of all, if you are in the town of San Luis Obispo, the wine region is 10 minutes. It's right there.
Yeah.
In fact, it's almost adjacent. And when you're talking about those Moros, the very first Moro starts at the beginning of that Edna Valley.
Of the AVA.
And it goes all the way out to the beach, which is where the famous Moro Rock is. Mm-hmm. And so that whole area there is just incredible. But one thing that I really want to point out that we should talk about.
Absolutely.
Is that there's a brand new AVA. It's the newest AVA, and it's called Slow Coast AVA. Huh. So San Luis Obispo is also called SLO for its initials, S-L-O. So it's called Slow Coast AVA, and it includes Edna Valley and the Arroyo Grande, which are already AVAs. Now they're sub-AVAs to Slow Coast. But Slow Coast goes all the way up the coast to Cambria, where you're talking about, because there's actually vineyards up there.
I know. I've had some of the Cambria Chard. It's pretty darn good.
It's good because it's cold. It's got that environment that the Chardonnay and the Pinot Noir wants. And so literally just last year, they were able to complete and succeed in getting the Slow Coast AVA.
Wow. Well, thanks for breaking the news. I didn't even have a clue on that. That's excellent.
It's exciting. What's happening?
It really is. It really is.
Yes.
So now we're going to go down to the Santa Barbara region, which if anybody has ever seen that movie Sideways, the characters were from L.A. and one was a wine snob or a wine aficionado, took his buddy up there, and they went looking for Pinots up in the Santa Barbara region. Tell us a little bit about your experiences in that region.
Well, Santa Barbara is a great place to go. I mean, you got to go there. One of the things about my book that I really focus on is terroir. So that people can find the wines they like, the grapes they like, based on where they grow the best. Mm-hmm. Because all up and down this central coast, there's different terroir. And, you know, in Europe, in France, in Bordeaux, it's all about the terroir. But people don't think that way here. They want a Cabernet. They want a Pinot Noir. And yet, to know where it was grown has everything to do with the quality. And what's really exciting about Santa Barbara is it's running east and west, and the mountain range runs east and west, which is unusual because they normally run north and south.
Yeah, that's where California coast kind of makes a little bit of a turn. Yeah.
So the east and west allows the Pacific Ocean total access to that valley because there's nothing in the way.
Right.
And it just comes in with the cold, and the first part, and this is called the San Ynez wine region. Mm-hmm. So within that is the Santa Rita Hills. That is the first part of that valley, and cold, Pinot Noir, Chardonnay. Then you move to the middle of the valley, which is now farther away from the ocean. So it's not as cold, but it's not as hot. And this is like the Rhone Valley. This mm-hmm. is where you can find incredible Syrah and Viognier. It's that whole central part of San Ynez. And then when you go to the east end of the valley, that's called Happy Canyon.
Okay.
And that's where you find the Bordeaux varietals. The Cabernet Sauvignon on the east end is outstanding. Some of those wineries are hiring Napa winemakers to come down and create that same high-quality Cabernet in Santa Barbara. And so think about this. If you want to experience everything from the very cold to the medium, to the very hot, and all the different grapes that grow in those different terroir, Santa Barbara's the place to go.
Wow, so they actually have that much diversity. So the further east you go into that, what did you call it?
Happy Canyon.
Yeah, Happy Canyon. That's where you're getting less of that coastal or that influence. So it's definitely warmer.
Very little.
So, wow, that's fantastic. So the Bordeaux varietals, for those of you that are interested, is as you may know, Cabernet Sauvignon is the primary one, and Merlot. They're sort of like mates in that one. If you go to Bordeaux and you get a Bordeaux wine, a lot of times on the label, they won't tell you what the combination is. But typically, it's a combination of, let's just call it, more Cab than Merlot sometimes. So you might have 60% Cab, 40% Merlot. It could be a combination of, it could be the other way around, depending on where, if you're on East Bank or West Bank.
Left Bank.
Yeah.
Which is East and West.
Right. which one is more predominant in Merlot, one is more predominant in Cab. But the other grapes that grow along with that we call blender grapes, which are now actually really good standalone grapes, Cab Franc, Petit Verdot, and Malbec.
Yes.
And they all grow in Santa Barbara as well as in Paso Robles as well.
That's correct.
So you touched on something that I want to sort of bring out a little bit more of. You're talking about the wines that people like. First of all, not everybody knows exactly what they like in a wine. They just know when they try a nice wine. I've done a lot of wine tastings and wine events where people will come up and they'll just try it and they'll say, yeah, I like this one and I don't like that one. And that's about their limit of interest or knowledge. If they like it, they want more. And if they don't, they want something else, which is fine. Other people start learning more and more about wine and it gets to be sort of an interest to them. They want to know, you know, I tried three cabs in a row and I like the one in the middle the best. And what did you like about it? That's what I tend to ask. Well, it didn't yes. have as many tannins, or it was a little bit more fruit forward, or they know a little bit more about wine. And so I think what Michael, what you're saying is once you know what you like or what about what wine you like, in other words, what I like is a cab that's a little bit softer, tannins, et cetera, whatever you're likes are, these are the things that can determine where you go in these regions that you're talking about in your book, because you can actually pinpoint specifically where you're going to get the wines that fit your profile by going to follow the exactly. directions in your book.
It's so true. Well, sticking with Santa Barbara and the center of the San Ynez Valley, when we're talking about the Rhone wines, and let's talk about Syrah. So if you're going farther to the west, where it's cooler, those Syrahs are going to be less fruity, maybe a little more green, okay? If you go farther to the east, where it's warmer, they're going to get a lot of ripeness, more sugar, more fruit-oriented. And then if you're right in the middle, which is actually my sweet spot, mm-hmm. Ballard Canyon, if you've heard of Ballard Canyon, that canyon to me is where the ultimate Syrah gets grown there. And it's because that's my style. But some people love that sweet. Some people like it more, right. you know, in that realm. But it's there. So you can really find what you want, and you can get the variations of the same grape all within, you know, a couple of miles.
Which brings me to, you know, we were talking about winemakers earlier. That's one of the things I really love and respect about winemakers is they're not necessarily, they're not making wine for the masses. They're making wine, and they'll all tell you pretty much the same thing. The less intervention, the better. They've picked this spot to grow these grapes because they know that under the ideal conditions, what, let's just say, flavors and beauty these particular grapes grow. And they end up making wine out of it just so that it'll be an expression of where they are. So if you like fruit-forward wines, you can, as you say, try the farther east wines. If you like something else, try the middle part. It's funny and amazing in a way how much the weather has to play with all this stuff.
And not so
just
true.
Not just the soil. I mean, it's really the weather, a lot of it. And, you know, we're getting we were talking earlier before we started about 2023 in California. And as everybody knows, the weather changes every year. But for some reason, we're focusing more and more on it in the last decade or so. And there's no doubt that there's some changes going on. But whatever is causing it, it's causing the years to be slightly different. When I was kind of coming up, it seemed like harvest or crush was always in October. And in the last decade or more, it seems like it started moving more towards September. It's getting a little earlier. But this last year, it was great. I don't even know, just a different weather pattern.
Lots of rain, huge quantities, cooler
temperatures in the middle of the summer. It wasn't as hot blasting as it was the summer before.
Longer growing time.
It gave us a longer growing time, longer hang time. So 2023 may be, as far as everybody's thinking, it might be one of those stellar vintages in California. It'd be great.
Can't wait to be drinking them. Yeah. Well, Cabernet Sauvignon is my favorite. I guess it all really has. And it's probably the world's favorite.
It is.
You know?
I think it's the most selling grape there is. The next one is Chardonnay. So,
correct.
And that's worldwide for sure.
I don't think a lot of people know about Happy Canyon.
Yeah, I've seen the sign, but I think I just drove right by it. Tell us a little bit about it.
Well, it's at the far east end of the Santa Barbara Valley, San Ynez Valley. You have to have reservations to go. It's not one of those places you wander around and show up and walk in, and it's the county that doesn't let them do it. So
mm-hmm, right.
they would do it if you could, but you got to make reservations. But to give you an example, there's one of them that's called Crown Point.
Okay.
Well, they hired a winemaker from one of those cult wineries in Napa Valley, you know, that sell $1,000 bottles of wine,
mm-hmm.
and they brought him down there to make incredible wine. And it's interesting for a winery. They only have one price for all their wines. It's $150. but it's worth $150. Because think about it. You could go and spend that $1,000.
Yeah.
Or you could spend $150. And the wines are absolutely amazing at Crown Point. And they're not the only ones out there. And it's worth going out there. It's very horse land. Lots of horses out there, horse ranches, and then a few wineries. And
talk about a scenic
Cabernet.
It's a scenic drive, too.
Beautiful.
It's so beautiful in there. You might want to consider, Michael, this would be really fun, is you go to all these exciting regions. I mean, this is your third book, I think. Your first one was Argentina, as we mentioned. The second was Bordeaux, which
Correct.
We're going to have to do a whole nother show about that one of these days. And then this one is California, focusing on the Central Coast. Wouldn't it be great to, as an event of some sort that we could put together, is have a wine tasting with some of the, that would show people the difference between, let's just say Cab, let's choose Cab. And we took a couple of Cabs from Napa, a couple of Cabs from maybe Mendocino, sort of that wine region in Northern California, Sonoma, of course, where we all know that's sort of the epicenter of wine in a lot of people's minds. And then also at the same table and just have different glasses, we could try this Happy Canyon.
And also Paso Robles.
And Paso.
They're great for Cabernet.
Right.
Too.
And what that would do would be, it would illuminate people's idea on the differences. Same grape, same season, same vintage, obviously. Different winemaker, but different region, different soil. And to be able to sit there and side by side kind of taste 3 or 4 or 5 different glasses to compare would be really, I think it'd be mind-boggling.
I think they'd be really good.
It'd be great. We should set that up. If anybody's interested in that, drop us an email or let us know. But that's kind of events that I think are really worthwhile, because we all love to taste wine, but to be able to taste them side by side and sort of get a guide as to where they're from and why, it gives you a different level of understanding about how to appreciate the wine, I think.
Yes. I got to tell you about a great experience along this line about tasting the wines from different wine regions. So back to San Luis Obispo in Edna Valley, there's a winery there called Tolosa. They make Pinot Noir and Chardonnay, yep, like you'd expect. But what the winemaker does is he buys grapes from each of the famous Pinot Noir wine regions in California. So going south to Santa Rita Hills, of course, his in Edna Valley. And in Monterey, there is the Santa Lucia Highlands. And you get up to
Anderson
the Russian
Valley.
River,
yep,
and even the Sonoma Coast, mm-hmm, you know, that appellation. Here's what's great about this tasting. You can sit down and taste those different wines, and it's the same winemaker. See, what we were talking about was these different wineries with different winemakers, but this is the same winemaker in the same winery with the same approach to making wine, but different appellations. What an incredible way to do it.
Yeah, that's true.
And when I was there, I told him I wanted to do it blind. I didn't want to know, because I already know where my favorite Pinot Noir wine regions are. And
that's a good idea.
And I was wrong. I could not believe what came out of all that.
What ended up being the one that was surprising to you?
Oh my gosh. Do I say?
Was it Monterey?
It wasn't at all. It was the Sonoma Coast.
Oh.
Yeah.
Sonoma Coast.
I mean, there's not very many winemakers up there, but it's an appellation that's got a really good terroir for Pinot Noir.
Right. You know, a lot of people don't realize that when you're drinking wine and you're looking at the label, that isn't necessarily where the grapes are grown. And a lot of the winemakers, especially in cities or urban areas, they're called urban winemakers or garagistas sometimes. But a winemaker, that's a separate talent and skill in its own right. And growing, yes, grapes is a whole nother one. And so I think
they're generally two different people.
Correct.
An agronomist for the vineyards and a winemaker, enologist for the winery.
Correct. And I think what a lot of growers realized was that Sonoma Coast was a great place to grow. They don't necessarily make the wine there, but they ship it to guys like down in Tolosa and other parts of California, yes, to vent in their own wineries. So
this is about what my book is about. I look for unique things for people to do. So it's not just this beautiful book with all the photography that, you know, you talk about, and I love the photography, but it's finding interesting experiences, because my book is about going there and having the insiders track to really cool things to do, like this one we just talked about at Tolosa.
No, exactly. And, you know, we've kind of covered a lot of what the book is about and your inspiration for that. But let's dig down a little bit, because the people that are going to get this, you're not just getting a coffee table book, as you say, with great pictures. But, you know, we were talking earlier. I've known Michael sort of off the air for a couple of years now. And he does these big trips where he goes to with his camera gear and does a lot of photography. You do all the photography in all of your books.
I do.
Yeah.
So like California, what is it? 436 pages with 800 color photographs.
Yeah.
Beautiful. It's printed on museum quality art paper. It's beautiful.
Yeah. Well, when I was going through it, and I love the fact that I've got a couple of these books, and I get to at night look around while I'm drinking a glass of wine and go through these things. But it really is sort of a guidebook in a sense. Like, it helps you. We were talking about creating itineraries earlier and what a pain it can be. You know, for folks that don't live in the Napa region and they're going to come up once or twice a year to visit, you've really got to spend some time focusing on where you want to go, making the reservation, and let's have some plan Bs and all this stuff that goes along. You pretty much give somebody a cut and paste kind of a scenario of going to these various regions in California.
I do.
I love it.
I make it easy.
Yeah.
So with each winery, I have their name and their address. I also have their email address, so you can write them. I have their phone number, their email, their website, all the digital and non-digital ways of reaching these wineries.
Sure.
And maybe speaking of digital, this beautiful book is also available as an ebook.
Wow, I didn't know.
So Apple and Amazon sell the book, and especially if you're getting it from Apple, it ties into your phone or your iPad. So like when you click on that phone number on that page, your phone's ringing the winery.
That's great.
You click on the website, opens to the website, and the one I love the most is when you click on the address, it opens up maps, and it gives you the directions to get there.
That's great.
So you get the beautiful book for at home, and then you get the digital book to take with you so that...
That's perfect.
It totally interfaces with everything you're doing. Great. And the same thing is true with the restaurants and the hotels. Because remember, the wineries are the number one thing in the book, but restaurants are next because it's all about the food and wine experience. And I find lots of restaurants that are at wineries. And then also with the accommodations, being able to spend the night in the vineyard, how cool is that?
Yeah, like one of the places I was trying to get a reservation at, but they were booked because it's very small. A lot of these places are very small and boutique-y, but the La Lomita.
La Lomita, yeah.
That's a great winery.
Oh, that's right. You can stay the night there.
Yeah.
Oh, and you know what's really cool there is they took... So this used to be a horse ranch,
mm-hmm.
and they would
like
sell horses.
Thoroughbreds,
right. So they would have to show off these horses to the potential buyers. So they had this really beautiful spot to do that. And like a horseshoe, kind of funny that it's like that, on the sides are where the horses... It's like their little barns while they're waiting to be shown. Not their real barns that they live in, but those showing barns.
Mm-hmm.
They have converted those into hotel rooms.
Wow.
So I think there's like six of them, maybe like three on each side, four on each side. Maybe there's eight, something like that.
Yeah, not very many.
Super nicely done.
Yeah.
It's really cool because they take each horse barn, two of them, and one of them is the bedroom and the other one's the bathroom. So the bathrooms are just as big as the bedrooms.
Holy
because
cow.
It's just cool.
You know, what I'm thinking too is a lot of folks like a simple way to get someplace. You can fly into Napa if you're on a small private jet, or I don't think there's any commercial jets that land in Napa, but the nearest place if you wanted to come up north would be landing in Santa Rosa, but that's kind of limited depending on where you're coming from. That's sort of the issue. But in San Luis Obispo, I was sitting at Tolosa outside overlooking their vineyards, enjoying a great tasting, and I hear
under
a jet landing coming
yes.
in. And it's not so close where it's disturbing you, but it makes you realize, and Alaska flies in there, Alaskan Air and a couple of others. But you could actually, from wherever you are in the United States, fly into San Luis Obispo, grab an Uber or something out to La Lomita or wherever your choice of places to stay is, and within a day or two, you could hook up 4, 5, 6 world-class wineries, and then hop on your jet and go away and have had a great experience. I mean, this place has some terrific wineries. Tolosa is just one
Thank
of them.
You.
But man, is it some good stuff there.
Well, all three of these counties in this book, they all have commercial airports. Monterey has a commercial airport. San Luis Obispo has a commercial airport. And Santa Barbara has a commercial airport.
That's right.
So if you're coming a big distance, you might fly into Los Angeles or San Francisco, and that would obviously be the international airports. But then there's commuter flights that run from those two airports into these three counties.
Yeah, I was just in Santa Barbara yesterday, and they were Southwest Airlines flies right into Santa Barbara. Alaska flies into SLO. And yeah. I think both of them fly into Monterey, if I'm not mistaken.
But, or you just rent a car.
Yeah.
And Highway 101, like you said, it connects every one of these wine regions that we've talked about. 101 runs right through them.
Well, that's the other beautiful thing about the book. If you're driving from LA up to San Francisco to do some business or a vacation, and you put a couple extra days on the on your list to make some stops, or vice versa, if you're coming from the Bay Area down to LA and you're taking 101, this is like the perfect itinerary prompt for you to where to go and where to stop and where to eat. Now, you feature some restaurants in here as well. So you met some chefs and talked with them, and you've got restaurant guides in there as well.
Yes. Not to pass up, because you were talking about geography, there's probably 30 or 40 or more maps in the book. Oh. So I really map out to make it easy for people to know where things are and how to get there. As far as restaurants go, the restaurants in all of the Central Coast are incredible.
Yeah.
Like, amazing. In all of these spots. I mean, you can't just pick one out and say, oh, okay, well, that's the spot where all the restaurants are. They all have incredible restaurants. And a lot of these wineries have amazing restaurants.
Yeah, and the accommodations. I mean, just walking in San Luis Obispo yesterday, there's just in the downtown region, there's a lot of more of the hip kind of restaurants down there, because there's quite a young crowd there because of Cal Poly. But out in the sort of the fringes, like you say, some of the wineries have their own restaurants, and some are just out in a country setting. But boy, talk about a great way. And you guys will really be impressed with the, I think it's just humbleness of these winemakers. These guys are just, and girls, there's a lot of great women winemakers down there, which shouldn't come as a surprise. Women have been making wine for a long time, and they're very well awarded all around the place. But yeah, the people themselves, a community is as good as the crowd that lives there. I mean, it could have great scenery, but if the people are kind of not friendly or open, it makes it different. And that's what's welcoming about that whole Central Coast region. As you say, they've sort of almost been dismissed a little bit, because you've got LA to the south and you've got the Bay Area to the north, and they're just this little chunk that you drive through in the middle. But now I think they're going to start attracting a lot more people that want to go there as a destination.
Well, you know, this hominess you're talking about means that when you go to these wineries, oftentimes the winemaker is there, the vintner is there, you get to meet them and talk to them, and they want to show off their wines. They're happy you're there. It's nice to go to wineries where they're really happy you're there. There's no snootiness in the Central Coast at all.
Yeah,
it's great. And you know what else is happening with this food? Is there's a lot of food and wine pairings now at wineries. Because they've got the chefs, because of the restaurants, they create food and wine experiences where they'll actually sit down with course to course, with wine to wine, and pair them. That's one of the best ways to experience wine.
No, I'm glad you brought that up, because it's a great way to learn more. If you're at that point where you already know a little bit about wine, or you know a lot about wine, I mean, this is not for... There's no judgment about, you know, what your level is. I mean, once you taste something good, you're going to like it no matter if you're an expert on it or not. But it's fun and interesting and informative when you get to meet these chefs, and they'll tell you why they've picked. In fact, a lot of the chefs I know now are choosing the wine first. They're not saying, well, we're going to have a red wine because I'm making this great steak, let's say, or a roast of some sort. They'll pick a wine and they'll say, it's got all these elements in it. I think I'm going to use this, this, and this. And they'll start matching ingredients to what their interpretation of the wine is. And that's a real fun way to have the two together. So, well, listen, what else can we share with these guys before we wrap things up?
Well, there's a couple things we could share.
Good.
And one of them is, you know, we'll go back to the very beginning when you talked about California. Well, when I was doing a California book, I included Baja California. because it's California, just different country.
True.
And they have Valle de Guadalupe, which is an outstanding wine region. And Valle de Guadalupe has the same benefits that we have here in this part of California with the cold Pacific
Coastal
Ocean
yeah.
coming in. They have the exact same thing, and they are producing great wines. Well, I already started my research and going there, but when I changed it to Central Coast, well, they're not Central Coast.
Correct.
But this was the opportunity to do a Mexico wine region book. So my next book is Exploring Wine Regions Mexico, Valle de Guadalupe, and then there's two other wine regions in Mexico. One is Guanajuato and the other is Querétaro. These are their three top wine regions. And that book is coming out later this year in October.
Well, there you go. You got a sneak peek of what's next. Well, we want you to get this one and check out the other ones too. But yeah, I'm excited for your Mexico book because I had no idea 10 years ago that wine was made in basically around Ensenada in Baja, because I used to go down there and go surfing in that area, and I love the seafood and fishing and whatnot down there. And I went down there last December, not a great time to go, but I mean, because all the vines are missing the leaves and all that, and it was kind of chilly, believe it,
it
or not,
cold.
For Baja, because they do get that coastal influence. It's a big wide valley that faces the ocean, and we in the Pacific Ocean on our coast, we get these sort of northwest winds coming in or breezes coming in, and it just brings that chill right up into that valley. But as you say, they're known for basically all the varietals that you'd get in the Rhone and Bordeaux as well. So they grow some amazing cabs, and they make some terrific Bordeaux down there.
The food is good too.
Oh, yeah.
Oh my gosh. The food in that valley, and we're not talking Mexican food. We're
right.
talking about gourmet, like what you would eat at a Michelin star restaurant in Beverly Hills here in this valley.
Yeah.
At a fraction of the cost.
Yeah.
With the wines. It's an amazing experience. I can't wait for this book to come out because it's somewhat similar to the Central Coast. Just like the Central Coast is kind of hidden, and I want to open people's eyes to the amazing wines and foods and tourism in the Central Coast.
Right.
It's the same thing I'm doing in Mexico. They're not just experts at tequila.
Well,
they're making great wines that are on famous wine lists in the United States that are coming from Mexico.
And not only that, but like we were saying earlier, when a wine region starts producing great wine and it attracts talent. So it's attracting winemakers from Napa are now down in Mexico. They've moved down there they're doing that. As well as chefs. I know there's chefs from New York, from Chicago, from LA and San Francisco opened up their own little places. Some are on property, some are near property, but there's I don't think in all of Guadalupe, Valle de Guadalupe, there's a hotel per se, but there's all these really cool bungalows and casitas everywhere. It's not what you think of as Mexico. If you're thinking
a lot of wineries have accommodations there.
That's what I mean. There's really good, you know, destination resort type vibe down there. It's like they call it the little Napa of Mexico. And it kind of is. It's like a young Napa. I mean, 10, 20 years, 30 years from now, it's just going to be, you know, blown up. And you're kind of helping us all discover it early with your book that's about to come out. When's it coming out again?
October. I should know the date. My distributor likes the first Tuesday of the month. So whatever the first Tuesday is of October is going to be the official release date.
Perfect.
It's the 3rd, it's the 4th, it's somewhere in that neighborhood, and it'll be out. And I'm excited about the next book after that. It's going to be on Greece.
Oh, man. You've got your book. You've got an agenda, Michael.
It's too exciting.
Man, I'm going to have to tag along with this guy. I'll offer to edit or something. We'll edit for wine or something like that.
So speaking of distributors,
yes.
People probably want to know where they can get the books.
Absolutely.
Okay. So, you know, the big ones, Barnes & Noble and Amazon, of course. But bookstores all across the country, you can get them in the bookstores. If you're in the wine regions in the Central Coast, many of the wineries have the books in their tasting rooms, in their gift shops. You can get them in wine shops. You can get them in gift stores. I mean, it's pretty well distributed all over the country. And then if you go to our website, which is exploringwineregions.com, you can get an autograph book.
Wow, there you go.
Because if you're getting it directly from us, I'll sign it.
Perfect. Well, that's I've got one, so I encourage you guys to do the same thing. Well, Michael, the books are they're beautiful, number one.
Thank you.
They're very beautiful. So their aesthetic is all get out. I mean, as you say, the cover, the paper, the quality is just, you'll be very proud to display this on your in your wine cellar, on your table at home. These make great gifts as well. But the content, that's sort of the extra bonus to the whole thing. I mean, literally, I travel a lot and I have people help me make itineraries and find this a winery that does this and find me a restaurant nearby that does that and a place to stay. This book kind of does it all. It does. Got it doesn't make there. The reservation for you, but at least it gives you sort of a skeleton of an itinerary of what you want to do. And as you said, all the contact information is in there. Simple push the button if you have an Apple phone and it hooks you right up with everybody. That's terrific.
Well, think about it in an evening, putting together an itinerary in your home, going through the book. While drinking wine, of course. And then you email, because we have all the emails, mm-hmm. all of those wineries. And then when you wake up in the morning,
boom.
You've got your itinerary.
Yeah. No, that's the way to go. That's the way to go. It feels like there's something I'm missing that I was going to talk to you about, but we'll have to pick that up on the next one if I can't get to it. We've covered the books and what's in them. Any closing things that you'd like to share with anybody or things that you wanted to point out to the audience?
Well, this is what I love to do. I love food, wine, travel, and people. And so I do this because it's my love, and I'm creating what I love, and I'm sharing it. So I hope people get the book because I want to share the same thing with them.
Well, it's contagious. I'm ready to go, and I just drove through there, but I'm ready to go again, Michael. So
great.
Thanks
so
much.
Thank you for having me on your radio show. This is great.
Absolutely, man. I appreciate it. And I'm looking forward to maybe we can hook up down in Mexico, but if not, I'll have the book ready by it'll be a great Christmas gift. You can put this on your thing to give to people for next Christmas because it's coming out in October. So that'll be a perfect thing. All right. Well, thank you for joining us here today on the Good Life Show. And for all you guys out there, make sure to check it out on MikeTheWineGuy.com. And Michael's website is ExploringWineRegions.com. You can't go wrong by checking that one out. And we look forward to seeing you guys on the next one and hearing you on the next one. Be sure to leave some comments down below. We love it. And share it with your friends. All right. Until next time, I'm Mike Rayford, Mike the Wine Guy, checking out. Cheers.